Where did you find out that?
I read the abstract.
It's implausible deniability.
Can't forget the alternative.
No. Very key part.
Yeah, key part. Do you like the new name?
I do.
Yeah, it's
good.
How
fun.
Yeah, Mighty coming. Great to have some history there.
Yes, thank you, Christchurch.
Do you know that logo?
The logo of the SRNs?
Yeah, the logo that where they've got the word Mighty, it comes from an old student radio logo, the Mighty Mouth, the first commissioned logo for the student radio network. Yeah.
Of course.
So that's where it comes from. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Karen. How are you?
Good. Have you had a good week?
I have. It's been very busy, but it feels long leading up to a long weekend.
Yeah, true. We're in the long weekend, aren't we?
We are.
I forgot about that. So synesthesia, I've got to pronounce it correctly, where your senses get muddled, if you like. You'll explain it better than me. But I was trying to think if I had that and I was looking at you, what colour I might see.
Yes, it's actually when different senses get muddled. So I don't think it would be something like when you're looking.
Yes.
Then that sense is getting muddled. But yes, synesthesia is when your brain routes sensory information through multiple unrelated senses.
I'm confused already. So it routes.
Yes.
Say again.
It's when your brain routes sensory information through multiple unrelated senses. So you might see the colour pink when you're looking at two.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, I got it. Okay. So I might see a colour when I'm looking at you.
Well, you might.
Oh, no. That's two things, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm looking at you and, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, it's a bit of a brain screw. But yes, it causes you to experience more than one sense simultaneously in a really consistent way. So that's a key part. If it's just happening occasionally, that's not really what we're talking about. But yeah, so some examples could include tasting words or linking colours to numbers and letters. Like I said, associating the number two with a pink hue, for instance.
Good idea.
Yeah, very good. Maybe where metaphor came from. But synesthesia isn't generally considered to be pathological unless it's really upsetting to the person who's experiencing it for whatever reason. It's more of a documentation of a difference in how we're constructing our internal worlds. So it's quite common in artists and musicians. Correlation doesn't imply causation, but you know, if you're that creative, that might lead to you becoming that kind of person. So Pharrell is maybe one of the most well-known examples of that. I looked up musicians who have it, and a lot of the time it was articles just prescribing, like diagnosing a celebrity with it from an interview where they said, "This song feels pink to me," which I guess is fair, but Pharrell's very vocal about how he does have it. So that was an interesting example. So obviously we all experience fairly objective sensory inputs through our sense organs and our limbic system, so that's unconscious unless we make a really concerted effort to block input or if we have some sort of difference that means we can't interpret stimuli like a blocked nose, for example. Then we are, of course, seeing, hearing, touching and smelling the world around us at all times. So then what's happening is that raw information is in our brains and being interpreted into understandable phenomena in higher cognitive processes. So that's when you think about what you're doing. So it sounds sort of outlandish, but some studies actually estimate that it has a prevalence of 0.8 to 2.8% of the population, which is quite high, all things considered. So one of the hypotheses that tries to explain it is called the direct activation hypothesis, which explains the cognitive quirk as messages intended for one section of the brain accidentally activating tissue in neighbouring regions. So cell firing in cortical tissue has electrical outputs, and that signal can travel, essentially. So the idea rests really heavily on how folded our brains are. So I feel like we all know how a human brain looks, very ridged, textured, and if you cross-section them, that's reflected in the middle, is a lot of folds and a lot of tissue compacted into a really small space. So that means we can pack a more cognitive punch. I was looking at what animals have smooth brains. A koala has one of the smoothest brains. Completely smooth, not much going on there.
What does that mean for the koala?
Well, it just means less cognitive punch.
So the koala's a bit stupid.
Maybe, yeah. That's kind of what we're getting at here. But yeah, if you think about a human brain,
That's it, hate speech towards a koala.
It is. It's very unfair. Well, it's not. It's true.
But I don't know. Who knows about the koalas?
Dolphins have really similar brains to us, which is interesting. They look really similar. They're obviously a lot bigger, but volume doesn't imply cognitive function. But if you look at a human brain, you can see only about a third of it, and the other two thirds are wrapped up. And if you flattened it all out to show every bit of tissue, it'd be about 2,500 square centimetres. So that's quite big. And that really...
2,500 square centimetres, right.
It's like kind of like a small tablecloth, I guess.
What if you ironed your brain out?
Yeah, that really screwed up my Google search history when I looked that up.
I bet.
But yes, so it's all really close together. So it's not implausible to say that the excitation in one region might then carry over to another consistently, and that's kind of what this hypothesis rests on. So that would cause a very frequent association between two bits of stimuli. So neuroscientists are generally quite hesitant to definitively say that one specific piece of tissue always causes a specific neurological function, because it's known that the brain is a super collaborative exercise, and we don't really have the technology to, in live subjects at least, prescribe direct tasks to tissue. We have brain scans, of course, but because the brain is so folded, it's hard to get that preciseness. But there are broad regions that we know that are very much associated with tasks. So in the eyes of some researchers, that proximity of brain regions holds significance when we're considering synesthesia, particularly for grapheme colour synesthesia, which is, I feel like, what people think of when they think of the condition. It's a subset that refers to when letters or numbers or even whole words are experienced by an individual as having a distinct and automatic colour. So in the brain, we have something dubbed the visual word form area, or the grapheme area, which is located in the fusiform gyrus, and that represents visual appearance. And spatially, it's adjacent to the V4 colour processing area. So that V4 area is part of a two-stream visual processing system. It's responsible for carrying information about object forms. So one paper has found that individuals with grapheme colour synesthesia can also be seen structurally. So there's increased grey matter volumes in that fusiform area for people who have it, which is consistent with the direct cross-activation hypothesis.
Well, I wonder, when you were talking earlier, whether that correlation between artists and this particular quirk.
Yeah, it's a cognitive quirk.
Yeah, and whether what came first.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to make a claim and say synesthesia came first, and then if you have it, you're kind of drawn to a creative profession, is what I would think happens. But cool to see a study about that.
And whether people talk about it, whether they can relate to other people and say, oh, I have this.
Yeah, well, it's quite interesting, and the same concept goes for a lot of cognitive quirks, is that if you don't talk very in detail about how your cognitive world or your internal world is operating, it'd be quite difficult to articulate what you're experiencing as opposed to someone else. I mean, I have that, there was a viral kind of fad of talking about whether you see words when you're reading something, or if you see images of like the scene that you're being created. And it was then that I learnt that not everyone, when I'm reading something, I see like a visual representation of what's going on of the scene. And I always wondered why people didn't like reading, which sounds obnoxious. But then I realised that some people are just seeing words and it's not creating that internal visual world for them.
Really?
Yeah. I was talking to some friends and they were like, yeah, no, I don't see. What are you talking about? I don't see like a scene of what's going on.
Just say it's either a bad writer or a lack of imagination?
That could be it. But I guess if it's happening consistently, maybe that's what's going on. But right. Yeah, the same concept applies to synesthesia. It's interesting to think of it. Pharrell talked about it in an interview. He's saying, yeah, you guys don't see pink when you're thinking about this chord? And everyone was like, no, what are you talking about? but yeah, this kind of line of thinking fits into the golden child buzzword of neuroscience at the moment, which is neuroplasticity. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yes, I have, yeah.
Yeah.
The ability to actually change, isn't it?
Yeah, that concept.
Your brain.
We know it to be true from our everyday lives. It's just like referring to our brain's capacity for change and the ability of neural networks in the brain to change through growth and reorganization. So yeah, your brain is very plastic. It's very changeable, and it can do a lot of weaving and moving throughout your lifetime. And neural pruning refers to cutting off connection, getting rid of connections or not using them as often.
That don't serve you.
Right. Exactly. That you're not using. Great. Not necessarily serve. Because it's used a lot in therapy. So if you have destructive behaviours, for instance, if you just simply stop doing them, then that neural pruning will occur and you will, over time, be less... It will not be your knee-jerk reaction, I suppose.
Okay, so it's being cognitive enough to know when you're doing it.
Yes.
And making a conscious effort.
Cut that process.
Right, okay.
Easier said than done, yeah, as we all know.
Very much so. Well, so pronounce that word for me again, synesthesia.
Synesthesia. I was saying for ages, I wrote a whole article about it and I kept saying in the meeting synesthesia.
I was saying that too.
What are you talking about?
All right, hey, so it's New Zealand music this morning on the program.
It is. I really like that you're doing that.
Good, for next week. So what have you chosen?
I have chosen Entertainment from Anthony Tonin.
Okay, so Anthony Tonin, mm-hmm. he got the Tate Music Award.
He did, yes.
For this particular album, didn't he? And a couple of years ago,
2023? Was it? I think.
We can put that out.
Well, you guys figure that out yourself.
All right, and it's called Entertainment. And before you go, what are you doing for the long weekend?
I am going to Whangamata with my family because my cousin surprised me. She lives in London and she came back for 2 weeks.
Oh, nice.
So I'm going to go hang out with her.
Are you going today?
Yes.
Is it supposedly raining, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Not looking too good. That's okay. You're near the beach?
Yes. Like
everywhere in Whangamata near the beach.
It's not hard to be.
Well, have a great weekend. I hope traffic's not too bad.
Thank you. That's on my brother. He's driving.
Is he?
Yep.
Good driver?
Yes, he said he's better than me. So we'll hash that out in the car.
Yeah, I would. Thank you very much, Stella. Here's Anthony Tonin and Entertainment.